Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
And now, let us test your language skills.
This is 荷蘭廣播電台。媒介網絡節目 Jonathan Marks 和 Diana Jensen 在香港的報導。
That's right, it's Media Network's Asian Roadshow. Jonathan Marks and Diana Jensen report from Hong Kong, where the countdown to the power transfer is well underway.
Between now and July 1st, 1997, an estimated 8,000 journalists will be passing through Hong Kong, examining basically the same story.In January 1841, China and Britain signed a convention which ceded Hong Kong Island to Britain. A year later, Kowloon was ceded too. And in 1898, the land north of the Kowloon Peninsula, the New Territories, was leased by the British from the Chinese.
Now that lease is coming to an end. As sovereignty of the whole of this area changes from British to Chinese, what will happen to life in Hong Kong as it becomes a special administrative territory? Around 2,000 Dutch-speaking families are part of the international community living here, most of them working in the banking or electronic sector. We've been talking to them, as well as to Cantonese and English speakers, to find out what they think will happen.
The answer is the same. China has pledged to preserve Hong Kong's capitalist economy, currency and free market policies until the year 2047.
But with the economy booming in the People's Republic of China, home to 1.2 billion people, it's no wonder some doubt whether the government in Beijing really needs or cares about the long-term fate of 6.3 million packed into a tiny space called Hong Kong.
And since the public media is government-controlled, many feel that any changes will first be heard over the airwaves. Hong Kong's governor, Chris Patten, stressed this during the recent meeting of the Asia-Pacific Broadcasting Union.
One of our British prime ministers once complained of bias in the media. And he was asked, in which direction? And he said, it's biased in every direction. And that, of course, is what a free media should be like. You have to tell it as it is. The media in Hong Kong today tells it as it is, and I hope will continue to tell it as it is. I hope that those who are nervous about self-censorship and so on in the future will be proved wrong.
Emily Lau is a member of the Hong Kong Legislative Council, and she's very concerned about what will happen.
I'm generally quite pessimistic about the future of press freedom and the freedom of expression because the Chinese government have already indicated that there are certain things which the media cannot do, like cannot launch personal attacks on Chinese leaders, and also they should not report rumours or lies. And so I think the message is very clear that the journalists must be careful. And I think the Chinese are really encouraging them to exercise self-censorship, which is something they're doing already. As far as RTHK or Radio Television Hong Kong is concerned, it's a government station, but its reporting is actually, in some cases, it's the best. It's surprising. But I'm talking about the English side of RTHK. The Chinese side is more cautious. But right now, the English side is good. But I think they are also prepared that in future, when the Chinese take over, and that they would just be treated as the propaganda arm of the government.
Now from London, we've a summary of the news. Iraq and the United Nations have agreed a formula for pricing Iraqi oil to be used to buy humanitarian...
Radio TV Hong Kong puts out a continuous relay of BBC World Service in English on 675 kHz. Surely that's destined to stop on July 1st next year?
Well, I don't know. But if the Chinese should want them to get out, I would not be surprised. So the thing is, there is still a lot of uncertainty about many of these things and how tolerant the future Special Administrative Region government of Hong Kong would be with foreign journalists. I think the Hong Kong people cherish human rights. It's something they've enjoyed for many years. They've never had democracy. But if you ask them, I think the majority would vote for democracy. But the big question is whether they are prepared to make personal sacrifices to fight for democracy and human rights. And I guess we don't have to wait long to find out. The challenge will come soon enough.
In the meantime, the broadcast bans on AM and FM bubble just like the colony.
If you are having any problems in picking us up, then please phone our hotline. And the number is 2794-3327. RTHK engineers are working round the clock to answer your queries. And if they can't help you with advice on the phone, they will even send a team to your home to make sure you can hear us in the best possible quality.
Now, that really is a personal service. Jajit Dhillon is the head of the English Programme Service at Radio Television Hong Kong. Only a small minority actually speaks English in the colony. But how many exactly?
Oh, roughly speaking, about, I'd say, 250,000.
And as far as the programme is concerned, I mean, do you have competition from BBC World Service?
Well, as you know, we carry the BBC World Service round the clock. So in a way, yes, the BBC World Service is a competitor, but we feel that the people of Hong Kong should have the best information.
And how is it operated? Is it government service? Is it financed by license fees? What's the system?
We are a government department. That means all our funding comes from the central government, but editorially we are independent. We decide on what news stories to run. The director of broadcasting has the final say in what goes out on our channels.
The majority of the residents speak Cantonese. Next year, though, RTHK will start programmes in a new language.
It is Chinese, but it's Putonghua or Mandarin. There is a lot of interest now in Putonghua. That's the language which is spoken in China. And it's becoming increasingly popular here. More and more people from the mainland are visiting Hong Kong and are also coming here to settle. So it's important that we keep those people informed also.
And you also have a bilingual service as well.
Yes, it's classical music on our Radio 4, which is presented in English and in Cantonese.
And it's now possible to listen to the programming on the internet.
Yes, it is. We've started a service whereby we provide our news in English and Chinese on the internet, as well as our popular Chinese general programming as well.
In the meantime, China Radio International is already targeting Hong Kong. On shortwave, advanced Mandarin lessons are heard several times during the day.
Advanced spoken Chinese, produced by the Chinese Correspondence School.
And if you're willing to get up at 6 a.m., you can hear a special program in English from Beijing. They hire airtime on a medium-wave station, but since that station has several clients, the program junctions are sometimes rather amusing.
Hi, I'm Larry King. I'd like to invite you to listen to Larry King Live right here on Metro News. We bring you interesting interviews with...
You're listening to Good Morning Hong Kong from China Radio International. Now, the weather report for some major Chinese cities. Beijing will be clear. The high temperature during the day will be 8 degrees Celsius. Hong Kong, drizzle to cloudy, 25. Guangzhou, drizzle to overcast, 23.
Notice that how in the weather forecast, at least, Beijing has apparently already included Hong Kong as a city in China. Further up the dial, the pace is much faster.
I have been listening to the radio here in Hong Kong for the last couple of days, and what I notice is that there is a lot of speech everywhere, and every channel on every station, be it public, be it commercial. Do the people here in Hong Kong like to talk?
Yes, they do tend to talk a lot. And, for example, Radio 1, again, the main Chinese news and current affairs channel, it has calls backed up, you know, 100, 200 calls backed up in the mornings when they have the talk-back programs. So, you know, yes, people do like to express their views. There's freedom to say what they like.
The name Hong Kong comes from the Cantonese, which means fragrant harbour. It's not so fragrant these days, more rather choppy, as hundreds of boats crisscross Victoria Harbour between the island of Hong Kong and the mainland tip of Kowloon. The Star Ferry charges $2 Hong Kong to cross from one side to the other. And that means the upper deck trip costs a mere 28 US cents.
It's one of the cheapest rides in the world. It also allows you to escape for a few minutes from the continuous traffic and watch the high-rise skyline.
The travel brochures encourage you to shop till you drop, and the stores in both Kowloon and Hong Kong Island stay open until 10 at night. Shop windows bulge with famous name fashions, electronics and photo goods. Yet tourists from Europe comment that Hong Kong's relatively expensive.
But it depends what you're looking for. Shifty-looking characters on many street corners near Nathan Road hiss at foreigners in loud whispers. Copy watches, fake clothing. And if you're willing to disappear up three flights of stairs into a dimly lit back room, you too can bargain for a fully functional Rolex-looking watch for less than $80. It's backed by a lifetime money-back guarantee. If you value your life, you won't try and claim your money back. Police in Kowloon, at least, are currently cracking down on the counterfeits.
Please mind the platform gap.
But if you take a few stops north on the super-efficient underground railway, the MTR, get off at Sham Shui Po. The high-rise buildings are the same, but the shop and street signs are only in Cantonese, and there are fewer Western faces. Passengers splurge from the high-speed escalators onto the pavement.
Across the road, the Golden Arcade has a scruffy sign on its side which says something about the internet. It's flapping in the upward breeze generated by the humid air and exhaust fumes. Inside are three vast floors of computer and video hardware.
A sign strongly discourages you to take photographs. Once your eyes adjust to the off-white fluorescent bulbs, you find stand after stand of software. It looks genuine, but it is a copy.
Often the CD-ROM covers are empty. If you decide to purchase just about all the internet publishing software available crammed onto one CD-ROM, expect to pay $7 US to watch the stall holder call someone on a mobile phone, and 20 minutes later, someone else taps you on the shoulder and shoves a wafer-thin plastic bag at you. Inside, there's a shiny CD with the software you wanted.
Further in the gloom, someone is selling software manuals. A sign claims they're original. Next door, a man standing at the tiny shop front tries to tempt us to step inside and buy a multimedia PC. It looks like it might work, but is what you see anything like what you get?
Even with bargaining, the real hardware is still expensive by most standards. The illegal software, of course, costs a few cents to mass produce. Most of it's coming from factories across the border in China. Will the tide really stop in 97? Well, making money seems to be more important here than authors' rights. The packaging often turns out to be more impressive than the contents. The video CD of the latest Walt Disney blockbuster is the result of someone taking a consumer video into the cinema and filming the screen from his back row seat. That may be the Hunchback of Notre Dame shuffling across the TV screen. It's rather difficult to tell after the video has been copied so many times. And the soundtrack is muffled by the sound of someone munching popcorn and giggling in Cantonese.
If you want to see what we've been up to in Hong Kong, check out the Media Network page on Radio Netherlands' worldwide website. There's a whole scrapbook of unusual snaps that add a new dimension to the world's most popular communications magazine. Still crazy after all these years.
But let's get back to radio. Over the last couple of years, the BBC World Service has been constructing a new relay station to serve audiences in Asia. They've put it up in Thailand, and it's been on the air on a regular basis since the end of September. Part of the job is to replace transmissions, which until now have originated from a compact BBC shortwave facility in a rather remote part of Hong Kong.
It's about a 45-minute bumpy high-speed hovercraft ride from the centre of the city. Mars Ashton, the relay station manager, picked me up from the harbour and explained they're now off the air.
The site is to the west of the New Territories in Hong Kong. As you said, a very remote area, so that we don't have problems with other neighbours.
And you can see the sea.
Yes, most of the sites are at sea level because it gives the best earth for the antennas. Most people assume that we would put them on mountaintops, but this is just not the case because the earth is not so good there.
What about wind? I mean, every now and again you see on the forecast that a typhoon is going to hit Hong Kong. Does that cause any problems?
No, these antennas were designed to withstand winds of typhoon strength, and there are special hydraulic rams which come into operation, which loosen the antennas if the wind is too strong.
Is this a sad moment for the station?
It is slightly. Not many stations are actually closed, and it's had such a short life, 10 years, that it does seem a shame to have to close such a nice facility.
So what's going to happen now? You say that it's available for transmission until the end of the year, and then after Christmas, what, the demolition guys come in?
That's about it, yes. We will have the transmitters will be removed for storage and the rest of the equipment disposed of, and then, yes, the demolition guys will come and knock down the building.
Inside, two 250-kilowatt transmitters are still humming in standby mode. A fantastic smell of Chinese cooking wafts out of the station canteen. We move through the doors of the entrance hall, past music posters for BBC Radio 3, and out into the fresh, humid air. Right, now we've come outside. Indeed, compared to the bustle of Hong Kong, you really can hear that you're away from it all. What have you got in terms of the antennas? There are five towers, if I count correctly.
That's right, five towers with four antennas slung between them.
And where are they beaming?
They're beaming towards China, primarily, and but we can transmit around as far as Japan.
Looking across the bay there, because we're just by the water, is that China already?
That's right, that's China that we can see there, yes.
What's the name of the city?
Shekau.
What about wildlife here? I can hear some birds in the background. I mean, any exotic wildlife?
Yes, well, we get kites and minor birds nesting on the towers. They don't cause a problem to us, really, and we keep them off. And some snakes around the site.
Are they dangerous?
I'm told by the riggers that they all are, but I suspect they're playing safe.
OK, thanks very much. Now we'll get back into the car and head back towards Hong Kong.
In the meantime, I escaped from the sun, went down an escalator into a darkened shopping mall and discovered an ice skating rink on the one side and a collection of commercial radio stations on the other. The people at Metro Radio have got used to being in a sort of goldfish bowl as passers-by stare inside. Programme director Kelly Dean for Metro Plus, one of the radio channels, doesn't want to commit himself on how the Chinese will view commercial radio next year.
Well, I'd rather not speculate on that. I'm saying that, we won't know. I mean, it's been promised there will be no change, and we'll just have to see if these promises are kept. And I wouldn't want to speculate one way or the other. I would hope that everything will stay the same.
Your channel, Metro Plus, broadcasts on medium wave only. Is there a market for medium wave in Hong Kong?
Financially, we haven't been that successful. And that's one of the reasons we don't do all news all the time anymore. I don't know that means there's not a market there. It's just that there are more listeners on the FM channels because they come in better. Our reception on AM in Hong Kong is not very good. So consequently, even though we have, by American standards, a quite sizable audience, it's not sizable enough for Hong Kong to be profitable. I mean, we have a listenership on a two-week QM of more than 300,000 listeners. If we could deliver that many people, even in a city of Los Angeles, we'd probably be making money. But in a city like Hong Kong, even with a listener base of 300,000, we're not making that much of a profit.
Mind you, the FM band is extremely complicated. Each station has up to 7 frequencies.
Where I'm from, in America especially, and I can't speak for the rest of the world, but you would have one frequency and enough power to cover your area. In Hong Kong, it's not done that way because of our proximity to China and other countries in the region, right? And nobody likes to have an outside country's radio station coming into their country. So consequently, we cannot just put one antenna and one transmitter on top of a mountain and broadcast with enough power to broadcast all of and cover all of Hong Kong. So what we have instead are seven mini transmitter sites, each operating on only 1,000 watts of power. Therefore, our signal doesn't cross too many borders.
We cross now to the Prince of Wales building down by the waterfront on Hong Kong Island.
British Forces Radio, BFBS.
Thanks, Diana. Well, we've come over now to another part of Hong Kong, and this is the studios of BFBS Hong Kong. With me is Rory Higgins, who's the programme director. Rory, can you tell us a bit about the history about BFBS? It, from what I understand, English was not the most important language when it started out.
No, it's a great shame that I have to admit that to you, but the reason why BFBS is in Hong Kong is for the Gurkha troops. So Nepali was the premier service. We've been in Hong Kong since 1973. Originally, the Nepali service set up in the New Territories and it formed in a Nissan hut, and it gradually grew. And it was only in 1981-82 when the English service started with a program from the BBC called The Archers. That was the start of the English service, and then a number of English speakers were employed to help teach the Gurkhas English. So that's the primary reason for us being here in the first place, anyway.
And what's the idea? Is it entertainment? Is it morale-boosting? How would you describe it?
It's all of those things. I mean, primarily entertainment. I mean, we always talk about education, don't we, and things like that, but you've got to get the listeners first before you can educate them, and you've got to entertain. It is for morale for both the Nepali people, for the Gurkhas, and for the British troops out here. We're a long way from home, and many things are familiar to us. There's a lot of English signs and so forth, but there isn't that contact with home. And wherever BFBS is, whether it's Germany, the Falkland Islands, Belize, Brunei, Cyprus, Gibraltar, it's always the same message. We're always the link with home, and that's what we do.
All around the world.
Is anybody out there?
Welcome. BFBS. 1997.
What about the transfer? I mean, that's on everybody's mind, I think, at the moment as you wander around Hong Kong. As far as BFBS is concerned, what will happen?
Well, we've been asked, the English service, at any rate, to remain here until the handover, as we call it, the 30th of June 1997, when British Hong Kong, if you want to call it that, ends and sovereignty is transferred. There's no reason for BFBS to be here after that time because the British forces will have left. It's quite interesting that we have a lot of expatriate listeners, Canadians, Americans, Dutch, a lot of local people as well listen to BFBS, and many people don't realise that we'll be leaving. They just listen to us as a good British station. And I think, actually, just to get on my soapbox, I think that means that British and European radio works out here. In Asia, there's a bit of a debate, you know, which is the best way? Should we be commercial? Should we be American? And I think BFBS shows that British and European radio works.
Because you're non-commercial.
Yeah, we're not. We're here. We are public service broadcasting. We take the best of what we can learn from other people, and we make it as entertaining as possible. Our relationship with our audience, our core audience, is very special to us. The door is always open. And believe me, our audience know that they can come and tell us when something is wrong. British troops always do that. And as I know from Bosnia, actually, because we were broadcasting there, and a lot of troops from the Netherlands, they also came and told us when things were wrong. Very happy for that.
Now, back to Hong Kong, and how many British troops are actually stationed here at the moment? I mean, is it gradually winding down?
Yes, it's been winding down for the last 3 or 4 years. There's about just over 1,000 of British troops left, and the families will be leaving in March 97. So after that, it's just going to be single guys or single ladies serving. So it's going to get even smaller towards the end. And you ask about, you know, our plans to for the drawdown. Gradually, our transmitters are coming out from outlying areas, and eventually we'll come back to the centre of Hong Kong. Now, the problem for us is quite interesting because we've been asked to remain on until the midnight on the 30th of June and remain operational. But as your listeners will appreciate, it's difficult to be a radio station operating with red lights and microphones 1 second and then be gone the next second. So we do have a cunning plan, which involves us using a container studio that BFBS built for the Gulf War, and that will be positioned outside this building here, and we'll broadcast there for about a month, that's the month of June. Then that container will be moved from here in the barracks in central Hong Kong onto a Royal Navy ship out in the harbour, parked in the harbour, and we'll be broadcasting for the last couple of weeks or so from there. It's going to be fraught with difficulties, it's going to be very interesting, and I'm sure our listeners are going to stay with us for that.
This is Forces Radio, BFBS.
The Nepali service has closed, officially closed, because most of, 99% of the Nepali troops have now left. Some of them have gone to Brunei. Some of them, the majority have gone, been posted back to UK. They'll be with 5 Airborne Brigade, who are part of the British paratroop setup. So the only Nepali troops left are about 30 or 40 guys. So we're playing Nepali tapes for them on those frequencies, but essentially most of them have gone.
अब प्रस्तुत भइरहेछ तपाईहरुकै अभिरुचिका माग अनि सम्झना कार्यक्रम.
We have a relationship with Radio Nepal and also with BBC World Service, who produce a program in Nepali as well. So we did get news from there. We keep a representative in Nepal who records interviews with leading politicians and so forth. And the news is sent either over the telephone line, you see technology has quite sorted itself out yet, or fax. So you get reams and reams of faxes coming through in the Nepali Nagari script, and then the news was read there. So it was mainly music programs of poetry. One interesting thing, actually, about the Nepali service is that BFBS has recorded many, many Nepali folk musicians and stars over the years in our studios. And because it's a poor country and has not had recording facilities for many years, so we have an archive which is very valuable to the Nepali people, and of course which we will make accessible to them.
Strange in one way that you're actually going to, let's say your final hour, your the peak as it were, you're going to have the smallest audience.
Well, we will be syndicating that. We'll be syndicating our coverage to the other BFBS stations. So I know what you're saying. You know, what's the point of doing it if they're all on parade out in the square outside? No, there will be many, many people listening, I hope, across the world to what we're doing. There's more than one story in Hong Kong, and the story of the radio station operating to the last second from a ship in the middle of the harbour next to what may be, for all I know, the Royal Yacht Britannia. That's going to be an interesting story.
Lovely overtones of, indeed, offshore broadcasting, or inshore broadcasting in this case.
Yeah, some people have said to me, well, you know, Rory, what's to stop you, you know, as you're sailing out, just to keep the transmitter on, and if the ship is going as it's going off, just keep on going. It's tempting. It might be illegal, but it's tempting.
Well, if that happens, we'll make it a headline.
Good evening, I'm Helen Rigby. The headlines tonight. A senior Chinese official has accused Britain of...
Next week, more from Hong Kong and more shortwave expansion plans. We'd like to thank Radio and Television Hong Kong and BFBS for their technical assistance.
In the meantime, on behalf of the production team around the world, including Diana and myself, we all wish you a very pleasant weekend. Now, time for some shopping. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.